right on. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again. This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 844. My name is Lisa Sheps, and I am joined today by guest co-host and apprentice, Harris.
Hey, how you doing today, Lisa?
Excellent. You're listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. You better not go away.
Hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
If you can raise the flag and wave up.
It is Wednesday, October 1st. 2025. On the show today, we have the Vortex Rep and their show, John Stetson's America's Mastermind Reader. We'll also be talking to Broadway and Austin and their show, Kimberly Akimbo. And later on the show, we've got Holy Shimoli and their show, Apprehension. Of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in New York, Chicago, Boston, and Albuquerque, New Mexico. Stick with us.
Lousy liars, when you see it in the press. Son, you're a natural.
Okay, we have Harrison is here with us today. You are an apprentice. I know nothing about you. You just showed up here, and I said, let's get you on the mic.
Yeah, sometimes I don't know nothing about myself either, so I'm glad that two of us are at least in the same boat.
Well, you know, this show is about theater. What do you know about theater?
Oh, man, you know, I know it starts with a T, but how it ends in depends where you're at, you know?
It actually depends, or how pretentious you are.
Yeah, how far your pinky sticks out.
For me, it ends in E.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So for some folks, it ends in R.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, great. Well, we're happy to have you here. You are getting your training on working all this wonderful state-of-the-art equipment here at KOOP.
Yep.
And you're going to want to do a show. Do you know what kind of show you want to do?
I think something primarily music, but, you know, I love gibbing and gabbing, you know, so might be throwing
good.
A little
you're
bit
on the right
chat.
Show for that.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Let me introduce our guest here today. We're not talking about why you're here. You're just going to be here for the conversation. Patrick Terry.
Nice to see you all.
Who we like to call
P. Terry. Yep.
Classic. Love to be associated with such a legacy brand.
Classic, right. Classic. So that song we just played is called Politics. It's from the show Texas Little Darlin'. Before I say why I played that song, I just need to tell everybody that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and On the Air are not necessarily those of Co-op, its board of directors, volunteers, or underwriters. It's just my crazy idea. And so I chose that song because of the political nature of our world right now. And they just shut down the government. And I am so torn on how that happened and why that happened. And so I just wanted to rant a little bit.
I feel that. You know, I think the slogan was Make America Great Again, not the government great again. So you know, I guess couldn't expect anything better, you know.
Well, I think you could point the finger at both sides on this one.
Right. The crazies and the craziers.
Sure. You can look at it that way. Patrick, let me give you a little hint about the radio.
Sure.
Nodding does not work.
Understood. Thanks for the tip.
You're welcome. By the way, Patrick was nodding all during that. How do y'all feel about our political environment right now?
Oh man, you know, do we have the FCC listening right now? Because you know you don't know how they're acting these days.
Yeah, you got to be. That's true. We don't.
I love the FCC.
It's disappointing. I think you know I. As someone who considers himself an optimist, and I would always hope that we can, again, appeal to the better angels of our nature, especially in these trying times. But whereas politics is so stressful and divisive, I do hope that theater can be a common language and hope to bring people together and share some stories and the true nature of these ideals.
Absolutely. And I was with you. I was also an optimist until the whole Jimmy Kimmel thing happened, right. And that took me over the edge.
Not Jimmy.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't Jimmy. It's just the idea that, you know, that we can stifle the artistic expression of one person because they don't like what they said.
Yeah, totally, totally concur. I'm mentally nodding as well.
Right.
But yeah, and for whatever reason, there was tremendous pushback. So perhaps optimism exists in the electorate and everyone who cared so much to make their voices heard.
That's true. So on to theater. Have y'all heard of Tilly Norwood?
Mm, no.
No. Well, she's an actor. And she is AI.
Is that right?
She's an AI actor.
So and what is she acting in?
Film, obviously, because you can, you know, AI on stage might be a little bit more difficult than on
right.
film.
Mm-hmm.
She was on the news today, and it's actually quite scary. And actually, she showed up. She didn't show up. There was a,
right.
on my TikTok feed, there was a spoof mm-hmm. of her. So I thought that was funny. But yeah, Tilly Norwood is... was a brainchild of, and I don't think I, yeah, I didn't print anything.
So if you do
out.
An AI play, is that just Toy Story? What do we call that? You know?
We don't do AI plays.
Right.
I just thought that was interesting. You might want to look her up on the Google and find out.
Perhaps.
But in more fitting conversation for what our show is about, we had two Broadway openings. Patrick, you live in... New York, don't you?
Yes, that's right.
Mm. Yeah, I had to look. I said Patrick, and all of a sudden that didn't sound right. I needed to make sure that was right.
Perfect.
But I was right.
Perfect.
So were you looking forward to seeing Waiting for Godot? Or as they like to call it, Waiting for Godot?
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. Alex Winter, Keanu, back together again. Bringing some Beckett to the modern times. I think that's exciting. Yeah, hope it does well.
Well, interestingly enough, it... what was I going to say? Oh, I have never seen Bill and Ted.
Mm.
So I was a blank slate. So it opened. The Did They Like It aggregator had 19 reviews. 7 were positive. 12 were middle of the road. And it's Waiting for Godot. They call it Godot. And what's interesting, and I never saw that because, you know, when they did the Patrick Stewart version,
mm-hmm.
And they always say Godot is like the British pronunciation, but I never saw this angle on it. It's Godot.
Yeah, I was.
Have you heard that? You're nodding.
Yeah, fascinating.
I was thinking, you know, maybe it was like the Homerian pronunciation, and by Homerian I mean Homer Simpson, obviously.
Oh, of course.
Godot.
Yeah. No. Anyway, so the reviews are mostly good. For writing for the New York Times is Lauren Collin Hughes. And I will just read the very first couple of paragraphs. She said, quote, "Does air guitar belong in a Samuel Beckett classic?" Mm. The playwrights in infamously meticulous stage direction somehow fail to mention it anywhere in Waiting for Godot, an existential tragic comedy whose anguished heroes, Vladimir and Estragon, are not known for their rock and roll shredding. But the California goofballs, Bill and Ted, are the raison d'être of the current Broadway revival of Waiting for Godot is the public reunion of the actors who portrayed them in the series of popcorn movies, starting with the 1989 time travel hit Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And of course, we're talking about, as Patrick said, Alex Winter and Keanu. That's mm-hmm. not hard to say.
It's
Why
okay.
do I have a problem
it's
with
key
it?
On you without the Y.
Yeah. So that's actually an interesting thing they talk about Samuel Beckett. Beckett is one of these playwrights that is very specific in his stage directions.
Mm-hmm.
As a director, when I direct shows, the first thing I do is throw away the stage directions.
Right.
And you're really not allowed to do that with a Beckett show.
That's mm-hmm. right.
But they've done a lot of that in this particular case. There's always a... Have you seen or read Beckett, either of you?
A bit familiar. I haven't seen this production.
Have you seen it at all?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have never seen it, nor mm-hmm. have I ever read it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, most people get mad at me when I say that.
Waiting for Beckett.
Waiting
right.
for Beckett. But there's usually a tree that's part of the set.
Mm.
Not in this case.
It's like John Woo with doves. That's Beckett with trees.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that means, but that's fine.
You're going to do great here, Harris.
Yeah.
So here's something the other says. Yeah, no, I'm not going to say that. She wasn't really crazy about the acting. She was, by the way, this was done, directed by Jamie Lloyd, who typically does things that are sparse. And this is indeed following in that, that milieu is a sparse set. Mm-hmm. As I said, there's no tree, and there's no country road, which is usually part of it as well. Mm. The set was designed by Sutra Gilmore, who did both the sets and the costumes. So it also opened at the Hudson Theater. And her feeling was that the acting was not all that strong.
Mm-hmm.
But she also felt that they could also grow into it. So it was one of those, yeah, not all that good, but could get better.
Right.
Which I think is something, you know.
Probably fair.
That's something.
Yeah, it's generous.
She also says that Jamie Lloyd has a reputation of being a star whisperer. Mm-hmm. She said not so in this case. So she was not fond of Keanu.
Like a soft mist over
the
mountain.
You're going to continue to correct me, and I'm going to continue to mispronounce it. For some reason, my mind won't pronounce it properly. She says the production feels cramped inside its wooden tube. It's also hurried and surface skimmed rather than depth plumbing. Mm. It's less funny than it needs to be, and because it's less human than it needs to be.
Well, as long as
it's not AI. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of folks just want to see movie stars. So, hopefully.
Oh, it will do well. Mm-hmm. It'll clearly do well. Other critics, Entertainment Weekly's Shayna Russell said, Reeves and Winter are old friends playing old friends, and their dynamic oozes fondness and long-felt frustration. Adam Feldman of Time Out said, Lloyd's choice that all of the props be mimed from the turnips to whips, emphasizing the ephemerality of the play's world, and sometimes yields fascinating results. Finally, Sarah Holdren of Vulture said, because the production feels too cool in more ways than one, it is the hottest performance, leaps out like a firecracker set off in a Soho boutique, and that's Brandon Dearden's superlative Pozo, who's one of the two clowns that show, or the two other clowns that show up.
And let me just say, when you do have time to revisit Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, it is worth your time. Fun movie, a lot of historical humor, and even the sequel, The Bogus Journey, maybe doesn't get enough love, but Keanu and Alex Winter, they've been doing their thing for a while.
I believe that's where Woe comes from. Right?
That's right. There you go. Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie, but I do know Woe for sure.
Give it a look.
Okay. And then another show that opened is Punch, which I did not even know about this show. I didn't even know it was happening until it opened. Are you familiar with Punch?
I've seen some posters for it, but I don't know much about the story.
Well, it's an interesting story. It's based on a true story about a bar fight where a guy hits another guy and he falls, hits his head, ends up in the hospital and dies. He is sentenced to jail. And then there was restorative justice where he meets the parents of the guy he kills, and everybody lives happily ever after. And that's basically what it is. This one for the Did They Like It aggregator had 8 positive, 4 middle of the road, and 1 negative.
You know what's crazy about this is I feel like I've heard this story every week about Dirty Six for the last 5 years. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not sure what that means, but that's good.
It just means there are a lot of fights on Dirty Six.
Okay, and what is Dirty Six?
Like 6th Street in Austin.
Oh, okay. I just call it Sixth Street.
Right.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, this is a play by James Graham, and it is directed by Adam Penford. And the actor who plays Jacob, who is the person who killed the guy, his name is Will Harrison. Mm-hmm. This is a Manhattan Theater Club production, opened at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. Manhattan Theater Club is one of the, I think, 3 nonprofit Broadway houses in New York. James' parents are played by Sam Ricardo and Victoria Clark. Victoria Clark, very well-known actor who originated Kimberly Akimbo, which we're going to talk about a little later today.
Very cool.
So anyway, the boy, I did not highlight much in this review, is reviewed by Elizabeth Vincentelli, and she liked it enough, I guess. What do y'all think about restorative justice in general? Do you know what that means?
Go for it, Harris.
Yeah, I think the state of Texas could probably use a bit more of it, I think.
100%.
Yeah, and, you know, I think obviously... Why do I keep coughing when we're talking about restorative justice? Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, the story is something that, you know, I could swear that I've heard happening on Sixth Street every month or so nowadays. So, you know, I think it would be interesting to see it in a play format, sort of where you explore what happens right beyond just sort of like the standard press release that you might see in the local news.
Great. Bottom line is restorative justice is when the victims meet the perpetrator and they try to see each other's side, which I think is, in most cases, pretty good. In this case, it worked out pretty well. Mm-hmm. But one of the criticisms that Elizabeth Vincentelli says about this particular show, and it's written from James's point of view, the perpetrator's point of view, because it's from his memoir. So we don't learn a lot about the parents. Mm-hmm. And she felt that that was a downfall of the piece. And she says, quote, Punch comes up short in capturing the exchange between the victim's family and the perpetrator because it always leans in Jacob's perspective down to the ending that shows him happily moving on in his life. So
yeah, I would imagine the parents are like 50% or, you know, the family of the guy, the victim. Right. I mean, that's a pretty big sort of piece of emotion that you can mine for material. So obviously I'm not sure what the original script was, but you can imagine that that's probably like some deep stuff to go
sure
through.
But it was taken from his memoir, so it's always coming from his standpoint.
Bias, whatever.
Other critics, Emily Travis from Entertainment Weekly said, bold and deeply human, Punch is initially a bit slow on the windup, but its stellar cast helped weave together an almost unbelievable story of compassion and empathy in its second act that left many theater goers sniffing in their seats. Sarah Holdren of Vulture said, Graham, Penfold, and company have done just about all they can to build an engaging stage event, and if the play can't avoid being a bit like an embodied pamphlet for restorative justice, then at least we're all gathering to hear about something that would inarguably, that the world inarguably needs. Mm-hmm. And finally, Robert Hoffner of The Wrap was the one that didn't like it. And he said, quote, to criticize a play that tells a story of transformation is to be a grump, but good intentions aren't enough to make up a good play. Mm-hmm. So, but it sounds like something I'd like to see.
Yeah, check it out.
My man did sound kind of grumpy with the last one. Can't lie.
Yeah. Okay. We're running out of time, but I did want to talk about a couple of other things. I'm really heartened to see when local people make national news, and showed up in my Broadway briefing is local Jesus Faes, who folks will remember he wrote Undocumented, and Un is in parentheses, and I think he did it at the Vortex. I'm not sure, but he is opening in New York a world premiere of a show called Spread. It opens at the Royal Exchange Theater, which I'm not familiar with. Are you?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah. It's directed by Tatiana Marie Carlo, and it opens on March 2nd after previews start on February 21st. And it says like this, Spread takes place at a high school in Austin, Texas. Four ninth grade boys gather at lunchtime to make a spread or Texas prison brick from their snacks of dry ramen, hot chips, beef jerky, beans, and hot water. Jeffrey, Andrew, Chris, and Jordan play fight, tease, talk blank, and try their absolute best to be friends for each other at the brink of adulthood. So it sounds like a coming-of-age story.
Yeah, sounds fun.
Yeah, but I'm so happy to hear when I hear Jesus. He's gotten a lot of national notoriety.
Congrats.
As many Austin natives. And we're going to talk about Beth Burns, who's doing a show in New York with you later on as well. So we love it when local folks do good. And the last thing I'm going to talk about when we go to break, how familiar are you guys with Schmigadoon?
With what now?
The series on Apple.
Yeah,
I'm familiar with it.
Yep. So, love, did you watch it? Did you like it?
I'm familiar with the first season. I'm trying to remember what the musical they
Season was Chicago.
Okay, right, right.
I did not like the second season as much as the first season. And as we all know, the third season, which was pretty much in the can, at least written, was canceled. But it's coming to Broadway in 2026. There was a showing of this at the Kennedy Center last year, I think. But Cinco Paul, who wrote it, has put together a new version that's going to come to New York at the Niederlander Theater for a limited engagement. Previews begin April 4th. It will open on April 20th and play through September 6th. And it's basically first season. But they have some new numbers. What was it? I thought I... yeah, there's one new number called the Picnic Basket Auction, which I think is kind of cute.
Good to know.
Here's an interesting thing. When I heard about this on a podcast I listened to, somebody talked about Cinco Paul, who I knew about because he's the creator of this. But he used she, her pronouns for Cinco. I went, oh my God, Cinco Paul is female? Didn't know. He's not. He was wrong. Cinco Paul. Well, I don't know. He might identify as female, but
it
he
was
uses
a
he,
potential
him pronouns.
Misgendering is what you're saying.
It was, and I think it was. So going to break, we are going to play a Cordon Puddin from season one of Schmigadoon. We will be right back.
My gal loves corn pudding. She eats it
constantly. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Harrison. Is Harrison? Did I get the name right without looking at it?
Close.
Harris.
Pretty close.
I added a syllable.
I do accept Harrison. Yeah,
okay,
in a
Harris. And now we're going to reintroduce our guest and talk about the actually the reason why he's here. And it is Patrick Terry, who is producing a show at the Vortex of John Stinson, American's master mind reader.
That's right.
So this is, he's a mentalist? Is that the proper way to say it?
Yes, that is proper. Mentalism being a genre of magic that focuses on mind reading. And John is one of the best of the best. Third generation. Again, his skills are really exceptional. And I have to say, he's really a mentor for me. He mentioned I'm producing these shows, but I'm also hosting them.
Oh, you
are. So again, to be able to introduce John to the Vortex audience is really a thrill. And I'll mention, too, we have a local magician who's also joining us.
His Brad Henderson, I bet.
Brad Henderson.
I knew it. He's my favorite.
He's great. Brad Henderson's a local wonder worker and really just a beloved artist here. So to have him on the show as well is really exciting.
So what kind of mind reading are we going to be doing? What are they? So, for instance, what am I thinking now?
Well, I believe you're working on Harris's name, so just making sure the knobs and the names are in good order. But the thing about this is it's very interactive, so it's determined by the people in the room.
Sure.
So that's always cool because it's never the same show twice, and people have these really unique kind of personal experiences. Whatever they bring to it is what's going to enhance these moments. So yeah, it's kind of whatever you need it to be. But these methods are very impressive, and I sometimes describe it as kind of the Jedi stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, magic has many different genres or ideas, and mentalism is really simple and connected and, again, pure. So doing it at the Vortex, again, that space that represents magic, but also just the theater culture here in Austin, I can't wait.
Yeah, so we were talking before the show just about magic in general, and I'm a big fan of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually said something really not telling, but I just loved the phrase in terms of the secrets.
Sure.
What did you say? Do you remember?
I do, yeah. Well, we were talking about methods and mystery and, again, kind of where the artist and the audience are separated, because magic is very entertaining, but it can be a little frustrating if you're not in on that secret. And we try to be very sensitive to that. But what I had said outside was we don't keep secrets from the audience. We keep secrets for the audience.
Right. So I found that really, I thought that was a wonderful thing, because I just told you a story about learning how a magic trick worked and it ruined the trick for me. The magic was all gone. So with mentalists, I know that, you know, we all have, or at least I have a view of the mentalist that usually has an assistant out in the audience, and, you know, they're feeding.
Someone's legs got to be sawed off for sure.
Yeah. They're feeding clues or answers in a lot of ways, we think. is he does not work with an assistant.
No, no, John's a one-man band, mm-hmm. you know? And again, I love that people maybe have some ideas because it's fun to disarm them mm-hmm. or, again, kind of work ahead of some of these impressions that people have and make it as personal and as interesting as possible, because that is the power of mentalism. It's your mind, you know? So, yeah, I mean, people can bring their, you know, conceptions of this to the room. We love seeing that. And then it's also fun to see people's, again, those ideas just get kind of crumble when you see the pure engagement of this. Again, it's theater, but it's so what you bring to it. It's really fun and engaging in a very unique way.
Sure. So I'm going to guess that if I'm an audience member, I'm going to not only enjoy myself because of how engaging he is and mysterious and wonderful, but I'm going to guess we're filled with humor as well. Could I?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
John's going to laugh.
Absolutely. John's a great trickster. And I think a sense of humor is really important to these things, adding a little levity to it. But yeah, it's hilarious. It's mind blowing. And again, it's a real honor to work with someone I've admired for so long. And I'll mention, too, one of John's other credits that your audience might be aware of, because, again, he's based in Boston but performs all over the world. And a number of years ago, do you recall the series The Mentalist on CBS?
Absolutely.
Big show. John was one of the inspirations for that
Amazing.
Character.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So, again, it's about listening. It's about perception. The entertainment and the methods are there, but it's really how present can you be, and then what can you deliver as a result of that?
Is there anything that you can tease us with that we might see him do?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mentioned John's like third generation. So there is kind of what's known as crystal gazing. He has like a crystal ball, which is a fun prop, but you can actually layer a lot of things into it. So that's something he's been doing for years, kind of the highlight of the show in a lot of ways. But aside from the entertainment, don't want to tease too much, but I will mention one thing I'm always excited about at the Vortex is Nick Patrizzi. Patrizzi's food truck. Talk about magical pasta.
Right.
That is something that always keeps me coming back to the Vortex. So again, you got the pasta, you got wonderful cocktails, and some, again, very magical entertainment.
Well, that's high praise from someone that lives in New York, which has the best Italian food in the country.
Nick Patrizzi is quite the conjurer, and again, it's high praise, but it's very true.
You're waiting for Patrizzi Brooklyn to pop up, I'm sure.
I'd be down for that.
So the other... Yeah. Oh, actually, I did have a question that I wanted to say. So a lot of times mentalists will like want to get like a piece of something, a piece of cloth from. So if I'm going to come see the show, should I bring a piece of like my mother's scarf if I want him to mentalize my mother?
Oh, I love the verb mentalize. That's very cool.
Yeah, you can feel free to use it. I just made it up.
Appreciate it. Yeah, bring some personal items, personal effects. There is kind of a genre of that, or maybe a scarf or even something you can hold in your hand. You know, even if it's not visible, even if you just hold it, maybe he can discern what you're hiding or holding or your connections to it. So, yes, definitely interactive and bring your magical artifacts.
Great. Well, say we got the idea of what John is doing. What's Brad's shtick? What kind of magician is he?
Brad is a bit of a historian. He understands these traditions of magic and kind of highlights these treasures in a way. So as I mentioned, John is a mentalist, very connected, very Jedi vibes. Brad brings a lot of treasure to the show. And again, it's nice to have that balance. But yeah, you're going to see some kind of ancient, fun tricks presented in a modern way. And again, I'm so happy that Brad is part of this because he's a really important part of the community here. And the fact that folks will get to see him this weekend is a real treat.
Does Brad do, is he a mentalist or is he a magician? Is he doing?
Good question. I would
Thank
say
you.
All good questions, Lisa. But I would say he is a magician.
Right.
As opposed to the mentalist. So he's going to do a little bit more like sleight of hand and some fun interactive things. And again, it's really fun because he brings this kind of revered sense of the history of magic and presents it in such a cool way, which, again, bringing it back to the Vortex, I think they represent that in such a palpable way, not just the pasta and everything, but what they do for the community. It's just a real honor to be in that orbit.
Wonderful. We're almost out of time, but I did want to mention that not only are you producing this, you are also a magician yourself as well as an actor.
That's right.
So tell us just a little bit about what kind of magic you do and where folks can get information about you.
Sure. Thanks for asking. Well, you can check out my website if you like, patrickterry.com. There's a little hyphen in the middle, Patrick-Terry. But you mentioned Beth Burns earlier. Beth and I are collaborating on a really special play about Harry Houdini. I play Harry Houdini, and it's a fun script that was born at the Harry Ransom Center at UT. And we'll be performing this show in the spring in New York. The New York Public Library is doing a big magic exhibit, kind of golden age of magic. Houdini's a part of that. And so, yeah, we're very thrilled to bring the show to such, again, a treasured place, knowing it was born in a library. And I got to give a quick shout out to the other performer in that show, Robert Matney.
We love our Robert Matney.
We love Robert Matney, local artist, just very kind soul and brilliant performer. And so to be able to work with he and Beth on this, I talk about true magic. But yeah, we'll be doing that in the spring in New York.
Well, wonderful. So when does this show take place at the Vortex? John Stetson's show.
Oh, it'll be this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay, great. And where can folks go to get more information?
VortexRep.org has tickets and all the information you need.
Wonderful. Patrick, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys.
Wonderful. That was Patrick Terry. He is representing John Stetson's America's Mastermind Reader at the Vortex, October 3rd through the 4th. For more information, you may visit VortexRep.org. And this is If You Could Read My Mind from the show Velvet, but I think you'll recognize this song. If you could read my mind, love. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Harris. That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, man. Always cool to find out more about the mysterious world of magic.
That is true. Well, we are, as usual, we're running behind schedule, as we always do. So I'm going to jump right into our next guest, our next interview. I had the great fortune of interviewing Anne Morrison, who is playing the titular role in Kimberly Akimbo as part of Broadway in Austin. And I went to see it last night. Very fun show, very worth seeing. But let's just listen to my conversation with her. We will be back at the other side. I am thrilled and lucky enough to have Anne Morrison with me via Zoom. She is going to be playing, actually, she has opened here in Austin by the time you're hearing this, at the Bass Concert Hall in Kimberly Akimbo. Anne, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you so much. It's so delightful to be here, and I mean that.
Well, it's good. You know, I saw your show last night, and it was amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I'm teasing, of course, because we're pre-recording this. I haven't seen it yet, but I will see it by the time my listeners listen to this.
I promise you, you'll have a good time. You will not be disappointed.
I cannot wait. So here's the deal. It's Kimberly Akimbo. Of course, I read all about it when it opened before, and it won the Tony and all that stuff. But I'm kind of a blank slate, which I love going to the theater as a blank slate.
I think everybody should, you know?
So for people like me, mm-hmm. What the heck is this show?
It's interesting. The creators of it, David, he'd written a play. It was a play version of it first. And he really noticed that a lot of his elderly women friends in the theater weren't working as much anymore. So he decided to write a play that would be able to feature an elderly woman like me.
A woman of a certain age, we like to call that.
Yes. And we're delighted. So when it was changed into a musical, some people will say they love the play, but it really works beautifully as a musical as well. And Janine Tesori really understood and loves David, that they collaborated so beautifully together to create the show. So her songs, her music in it really just wraps around the storytelling so beautifully. And so the show is very simple. It's simply about a young girl, a teenager, who's 15 and in the course of the play is turning 16, but she has a rare genetic disease where she actually ages every year 4 to 5 years. So even though she's turning 16, she's actually 70.
So around. And you're playing that character.
And guess what? I am 70 and I act like a 16-year-old. So I don't really have to act. I just have to show up.
Well, I was about to ask you, what are you doing to age up?
I don't have to do anything. It's great. and there's we can talk more in depth about what I've discovered by playing Kimberly. But that's basically it. She has a very dysfunctional family, which you fall in love with because most of America has dysfunctional families. So you can relate to it. And she is dealing with this disorder. She's also feeling like a misfit oftentimes because she does look like the lunch lady when she walks into a high school. She has to move around. She's involved with an aunt that may get her into some big old trouble, but it becomes an interesting adventure. And despite all that, Kimberly is very optimistic and is hopeful, and that the by the time the curtain comes down or the lights go down and we come out for our bows, the audience, you can really feel that their hearts have been touched, open, and what a lovely thing to go through in this time in the world right now.
Especially so right now.
You feel good about yourself, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's amazing. So your fellow castmates, you have castmates that are playing younger folks, right?
Right. Well, and they're amazing because some people will say, do you have a teacher that tours with them so they can keep up with their schoolwork? And they're all like 20, 21, 23, you know, they're fine. But they look extremely young. I get to play my real age for the first time in my life. My parents are in their 40s. And so it's a huge range of different generations. But we are, well, you know what's beautiful about this? I'm going to be honest with you. The creators, your host sets the tone. The creators are heartfelt people. Sure. And they attract Jessica Stone, who directed the piece, and Danny Mefford, who choreographed it. These are heart human beings. They're joyous. The whole cast is that. The whole crew is. Everybody involved in the show, we laugh, we giggle. If something goes wrong, we just laugh it off. I've never been in a situation where you walk into your job feeling so, I'm excited about doing this tonight. That is
amazing and so good. And I know I've not done anything by David Lindsay Abaire, but I have done Janine Tesori's works. So we did Fun Home, which has the same kind of feel.
Exactly. She understands the human condition really well.
100%. Yeah. And those shows are special when you get them. Right. In my other life I run a theater here in town, and I like to surround myself with those kinds of shows. So I'm really thrilled to see you in this. Right. So how is it? It's got to be a lot of fun as a person of a certain age to be able to let loose and play a 16-year-old in the skin of your own body.
Right. And it's interesting. Well, I teach also. People keep on saying, because I don't live in New York, so they assume that I don't have a career anymore. I work all the time.
Sure.
I just hang my hat somewhere else.
I've read your Wikipedia page.
I also love to teach. And I have a theater company called Sarasola Productions, where we help people develop and find their voice in solo theater. And that could be anything. So it could be a comedy. It could be an autobiographical piece. It could be biography. It could be what I call a solo musical. Cabaret to me is a solo musical. I want a good story leading into a song. I never want to hear this next song was written by. Or it could be spoken word. Whatever it is that puts you on the stage alone. We teach that now in some of the performing arts high schools in Sarasota, Florida, where I'm living. And it's a joy. And I can say that because I love solo theater. I have lots of solo theater pieces. I think one of the things that I learned from doing solo theater, I try and inspire the students to try it, even though it's terrifying to be on stage by yourself, is that you learn to really listen, because your audience becomes your scene partner. And I feel that you're better on stage with other people, not that you're now playing out to the house, but you listen. Sure. In a different way. You understand storytelling in a different way. You really understand that you're part of the whole in a way that you don't understand unless you're standing by yourself on stage.
That's amazing. Where can folks get information about your work as a solo artist?
Well,
teaching.
Yeah, you could go to YouTube, Sarasola Productions, a little blue circle, kind of like the shirt that I'm wearing, but nobody can see that. And you click in there. I have a playlist. Go to the playlist. It's for all my students. So you can go look at other people's work in solo theater, cabaret, whatever, because then I can show it to them and we can discuss it. So I'm always combing and looking for new things. And then I just do it. Several clips are in there just of myself doing it. But what I would love to do is now take what we do out to other cities. Like, I'd love to come to Austin and actually have a workshop on solo theater development, because it's fun.
Let's do it. I know someone that runs a theater here in town.
Talk to that person.
We can chat about that. Okay. I wish we had a lot of time. I don't have a whole bunch more time left to talk, but I have a couple things that I do want to talk about. First of all, who should go see Kimberly Akimbo? Is this everybody? Should the whole family go see it?
Oh, absolutely. Now, I will say that there is language in it. And if you're stuck in the mud about, you know, those are sensitive things that may bother you, but it's funny because it's coming out of people who are just generally unconscious. And actually, it's Kimberly who has to be the adult. This is a thing that no one really talks about, is if Kimberly is six turning 16 and is 16 by the end of the play, and she's but in the body of a 7-year-old, that means her prefrontal cortex is in, where the most of the 16
Oh,
years does not
interesting.
have that. Nobody thinks about that. So I love that her understanding of having to parent, she'd lapse into being a kid, like, oh God, mom, and all that stuff as a kid does. Oh, I know why you asked me about being 16. I meant to tell you that when I go to the schools, I work with 16-year-olds. So sometimes I'll have a gesture or a foot thing that I do, or a little thing that's my tribute to Maggie, and this is my tribute to Robert, and this is my tribute to, because I watch and study them. And they are at times very sophisticated, and then there are times they're just like 12.
100%.
And that's me. I'm 70 and I still act 12 sometimes.
So you and I have a connection, that actually a physical one and a friend one. You were just a couple hundred yards away from me in 1981 when you were at the Alvin Theater, and you opened Merrily We Roll Along on November 16th, I think, 1981. I was directly across the street at an equally terrible, well, it wasn't terrible,
Well,
another flop
it didn't do well then.
called Oh Brother
Oh my God, you were an Oh Brother.
at the Antitheater. I played the camel's ass
Oh
in
my
Oh
God,
Brother.
I think we met.
We
I
may
think we
have,
met then. Yeah, I think we met.
but I just think I was just so excited to talk to you. And also,
Oh,
I
it's
like
fun
to tell
talking
this
to you
because I love to
about
drop
that.
names. Jason Alexander is a friend of
Oh
mine as
my
well.
God. Yeah, I love him dearly. What a beautiful human being he is.
So how was it, just and we don't have any time at all, but how was it, you know, Merrily We Roll Along is obviously resurgent, and we had just the revival and the movies coming out, but I remember at the time we were competing for the biggest flop, and I will argue that Oh Brother was the biggest flop. We played three performances, y'all played I think eight,
16 performances, yeah. Well,
16, right.
two
You
weeks.
probably made the Joe Allen's wall. We did not.
Yeah.
So
Yeah. Now we ended up still being successful. I mean, I got the Theater World Award that year. I was the only
you
one who got
did.
the award.
You
Yeah.
did.
Goofy. But
Amazing. So how, I
well,
know how I felt at that time, but how did it feel for
oh, we're
you at the time
devastated.
going through that?
It was devastated. Oh, this is a we may have to go on again just to talk about Merrily, because that's a very fascinating discussion. You know, I have a one-woman show, speaking because I love solo theater, called Merrily from Center Stage.
Oh.
And I sing the entire score, pretty much, of the 1981 Merrily, while I tell the story of what it was like to be 25 on stage during that 6 weeks of previews, which to me is the most interesting part of that story.
Yes, because everything changes on a daily basis.
Everything changes. And it's my tribute to both Hal Prince and Stephen Sondheim.
Sure.
So maybe I should just come back to Austin and just do the show.
I would absolutely love that.
Okay, that'd be
You have an
fun.
open invitation.
Okay, there you go. But yeah, it was an amazing experience. And it's interesting because I never liked George First's book, and he just changed it. I don't think he's improved it. If you ask me honestly, I don't think it's I want someone to have the courage to go back and do the original,
A little
because I
problematic, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Anne Morrison, thank you so much for coming
Thank
on the show.
you.
I am looking forward to seeing you, even though by now I've already seen you, but I'm excited to see you. I will be
Let's
in the
go out
audience.
afterwards, shall we?
We could try.
Okay.
We could try. I tend to zoom home.
Me too. So maybe we'll have to meet for coffee earlier.
I would like that.
Okay. I'm
Best
so
of luck.
excited coming to Austin. I'm really excited about it.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't get to ask you what you plan to do here, but we'll do that on another time when you come back.
Because I've got 12 answers.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
That was Anne Morrison. She is in the Broadway tour of Kimberly Akimbo, now playing at the Bass Concert Hall through October 5th. For more information, you may visit BroadwayInAustin.com. We are back. You are still listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Harris. How much have you learned today, Harris?
A lot, not gonna lie.
Amazing. We're gonna just jump ahead. We'll get to the local stuff in my local calendar later. We're gonna jump ahead and introduce our next guest, which is part of Holy Shmoly's production of Apprehension. And we have the director of this piece, Sonnet Blanton. Hi, Sonnet.
Hello.
And two of the actors, Brent Wersner.
Hello.
And Justin Smith.
Hello.
And then, of course, not on microphone, but close by is the producer and god of all things Apprehension, Christopher Shea. yell out hello.
Yo!
There, you could barely hear him. This is a new piece, is it not?
Blanton? Yes, it is. Yes.
Sonnet, tell us what it is.
It's written by LB Deo. It is a psychological thriller that I think speaks to the sort of fractured nature of our collective reality right now. It's got some definite moments of absurdity, but it is a pretty dark thriller.
Dark is good.
Yeah, it's about a man played by Brent Wersner who is experiencing a breakdown, and we kind of watch him sort of lose touch, and we're not sure as an audience what's really going on.
Have you been spying on me? Sounds like my life. That's amazing. Is this a world premiere?
It is.
Wonderful. And as I'm not familiar with the playwright, LB Deo, are they local?
Yes, he is. Yes. He amazing. Used to host Dionysium, which was a...
Don't know what that is?
Yeah.
It sounds like fun. It sounds like there's some drinking involved.
I think there was. I never went to it, but it was kind of like a debate that okay. they would get up, and it was mm-hmm. it was a cool, one of those old Austin cool events.
Well, wonderful. So, Brent, you play the lead role. What's the yes. character's name?
Joe.
Joe, mm-hmm. of course. Tell us about Joe.
He's suffering an identity crisis.
So I hear.
Yeah. And it's around his memory and what he can recall about himself and his past. And it brings up a lot of questions, obviously, as it would in someone. And so you kind of, yeah, like Sonnet mentioned, you get to watch him navigate through his pulling back the pieces and the curtain and trying to find out who he really is.
So playing a character like that as an actor can be pretty taxing on you personally. How are you? How's that going for you?
It is taxing. Yeah, you're right. It is. It's been good though. I mean, it's been insightful. I mean, I think at my age and my point in life,
22.
Yeah, 22.
Okay.
going on 18.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that like, he's near this middle age, and he's got. I think I can like. There's certain themes about the character that resonate with me, and with most people. And there is a darkness and a depression to him. He is a depressed person. And it's heavy. So there's a lot of heaviness there. So
okay.
I try not to sit with it too early in the process.
It's probably smart.
Mm-hmm.
And Justin, tell us about who you play in your character.
My character's name is Charles. And without trying to give too much away, Charles is a member of a group of friends that sort of exists throughout the play to challenge Joe and lead Joe into different decision making, different thought patterns, I guess is a great way to put it. But it's constantly sort of going back and forth between not knowing Charles's motives.
Okay. And y'all are prepared to do a little scene, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay. Did we need a Sonnet? Do you want to set it up?
It's very brief. It's just a party scene, and Charles has pulled Joe away for a private moment.
Okay, wonderful. This is Brent Wersner and Justin Smith doing a scene from Holy Shmoly's production of Apprehension.
Well, there he is, the man of the moment.
What are we celebrating?
Well, your new job, dummy. What did you think?
Yes?
Seriously, how are you feeling? Is there a lot of improvement? It looks that way.
Yeah, yes, I think so.
Well, what do you mean you think so? Are you depressed or not?
I'm still a little anxious, Charles. A little unsteady. But, damn it, yes, I am doing better. The sun is coming out from behind the clouds, and I think I'm going to be okay.
Well, look, I'm not a doctor like Paul, but I think it's going to keep getting better. This is just a premonition of the relief to come. You'll see. Try and remember the depression makes everything seem worse, including the recovery from the depression. All these disturbed thoughts about murder cults and ancient gods, this trouble with your memory.
Did we talk about ancient gods?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay, I'm intrigued. That's mysterious. So in the press release, Sonnet, you said it's eerie, smart, and brutally honest. So is it eerie like, I mean, we're here in spooky season.
Yes.
Is it eerie like, because that felt a little eerie to
me. Yes, I would say it is. It's a good Halloween season play.
Amazing. Will I be scared? If I don't like scary movies, am I going to enjoy seeing this?
I would say it's more suspenseful than really scary.
Yeah, like jump scare.
It's also a dark comedy.
It's very, very, very dark comedy, but there's a lot of, there's moments of.
So there are lighter moments in here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And there's some absurdity in it too, which I think is.
It helps with the heaviness of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's amazing. Is there anything else you want to highlight from your design team, production team?
I just want to say that we have an incredible cast of people who, some of whom have not worked in Austin on theater stage for a while, but was, you know, people who've been doing it for a long time, and we're seeing them for the first time on stage again for since a long time ago. Yeah. So it's, but everyone in the cast is incredible. So
one of your actors, Michelle Keffer, actually performed at my very first theater 25 years ago, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
She's
no,
amazing.
Not 20, 22. I don't know. 20 some odd years ago.
Yes.
Well, and my, the
when
first
I was
time
three,
I, the first time I worked with Shay and Jeff Mills, who's in the play was about 20 years
we're
ago.
We're all old.
Yeah. It's been 20 years since I've worked on stage in Austin, and I was at Hyde Park Theater in a show.
And
I
why
think
is that,
23
Brent?
Years
why,
ago.
Why have we not seen you on stage in 20 years?
My wife and I, we moved away. Okay. We moved to New York in 2007.
Place.
We were there for about 13 years and then moved back here.
Why would you ever leave?
COVID. We had two kids.
There you go.
Yeah. And one of them was born during COVID at the height of COVID in New York. So we kind of jumped at that point.
And okay. Brent was doing film work during
yes,
that time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So, that works. They do that there in New York City. well, that's amazing. So as you said, you're playing at Hyde Park Theater. When do you open?
We open Thursday, October 9th, so a week from tomorrow.
And play through when?
November
1st. Thursdays through Saturdays.
Well, that's great. So you got about a week. How y'all doing? How's rehearsals going?
We're in good shape. Mm-hmm. I think we're in good shape.
Now, I've worked with Justin in the past. I have not worked with you, Brent. But so Justin can be a little bit of a pain. How's he doing with this show?
He's doing all right.
He can get on your nerves.
No.
He's awesome.
We love Justin.
Justin, it's funny because a lot of the people who are in the show and working on the show have been friends for a really long time. And it's, you know, when you've got a group of people like that, you're a little worried about bringing other people in, and Justin has just like slotted right in with the
seems
crew.
Like
so it's been
so
really
these
fun.
So your actors have been working on this together for a while.
No, it's just they're friends.
They're friends.
We've
got
been
it.
Friends forever. So.
I'm not friends with any of them.
Got it. Right.
Yeah.
Me
yeah.
either. How many people? How many cast members are in the cast?
There are nine.
Yeah.
Nine.
Yeah, yeah,
nine.
You know who it knows? The director. We should talk to her.
I was right.
It's okay.
I'm the same way.
I totally think. Well, we're totally out of time. I'm so happy to have had you on the show. Thank you all so much, and best wishes on your opening and
thank
the run.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
And I should say this is at Hyde Park Theater.
Yes.
Just so people know where to go
and where can
get
tickets at apprehension.com.
We're just going to say you can get information at apprehensionplay.com.
Excuse me.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Christopher Shea, Sonnet Blanton, Brent Werzner, and Justin Smith, all of Holy Shmoly's production of Apprehension, playing October 9th through November 11th. For more information, you may visit apprehensionplay.com. And this is from Aristos the Musical, and it's called Memory. We will be right back.
The memories come like rainfall, the earth is crushed to sweetness.
Okay, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Harris. I'm not going to have time to do our normal, our normal local stuff, but I do want to just mention this. I don't think I have talked about this in the past. The Barons Men are about to open up Much Ado About Nothing out at the Curtin Theater, Richard Garriott's Curtin Theater, which is an amazing place and well worth going to see. But you might want to consider going to see the show, because this is the last time you'll be able to visit the Curtin Theater, because it has been sold to developers and it will not exist anymore, I believe, after this show. And the Barons Men are going to have to find another home, which is very sad on multiple reasons. We don't like that people. And this also affects, by the way, Austin Shakespeare's Young Shakespeare. They're losing their home as well. So that's just something to know. You can get information about the Barons Men, among other places, at atxtheater.org. And that's where you can go and get information about all the local shows and auditions happening, as well as ctxlivetheater.org. Those are two places to find that stuff. So, Harris, how have you enjoyed your time here on ground floor theater, on offstage and on the air?
Man, it's been fun. I've learned a lot, and hopefully I didn't cramp your style too much, Lisa.
No, you did a great job. We loved having you here. Did you learn anything about theater that you didn't know?
I learned that, unsurprisingly, the drama world has a lot of drama.
It does indeed. Coming up next here on Co-op is What's New, where Tracy's going to tell you what's new. He's here trying to wrestle the microphone away from me right now, but I'm going to hold on to it for a couple more seconds. You know, this is October. It's spooky season. Not my favorite thing in the world. I'm not a big Halloween fan. What about you?
You know what? I like the revealing outfits that some people wear. And
dog.
Yeah, I like the free parties, and that's basically it.
Okay. Well, in honor of spooky season, I thought I'd play something that is spooky. And now I don't remember what it is because I didn't put it on my script. Oh, it's Spooky Mormon Hell Dream from Book of Mormon. We'll see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
Spooky Mormon Hell Dream.